Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You know what? I like hearing from you. I particularly like hearing from you when you write in with suggestions of people we should be speaking to, places we should go with the podcast, or themes for an episode. And the reason I mention that is because this week's episode is a listener suggestion. If you've got a strong London-centric idea that you'd like us to poke a microphone at, getting in touch couldn't be simpler. You'll find us on Twitter, of course, at Londonist Sound. And on the subject of social media, a lot of people signing up now for the Londonist Out Loud Instagram account, which is where you can find pictures of all of our guests week by week, including today's Jeannie Dawkins, who is at the fore of a rather unusual campaign, and one that's trying to look out for the best interests of, well, everyone in the city, but particularly those who have frequent contact with shops. So let's do this. It's the 31st of January, 2014. I'm in Quentin Wolfe, and this is Londonist Out Loud.
Hey, baby, let me take you down to a place of strange sights and sounds you ain't never seen the light before. Just a stone's throw from your front door.
Well, hello, hello. I'm not much of a shopper, and I feel a little bit like a fish out of water here. I'm very much in the shopping central in the West End. We're not far away from Baker Street. Luxury sort of shops, I would say. We've got expensive footwear aplenty. A leather company just over the way there selling some very nice fashion. Health stores. But why am I telling you this? Well, we're with Jeannie Dawkins, the director of Close the Door campaign, to really look at what some of these shops are doing and how they could help improve the health of their customers and maybe the environment in general. Jeannie, hi.
Hi.
This Close the Door campaign, I mean, it seems from the name of it rather self-evident what your aim is.
Yes, very self-evident. And it's a very, very simple campaign.
The challenge we have here on a 50-minute podcast is to work out how we're going to fill the time. And I suspect there's actually rather more to this story. I suspect some of the subjects we're likely to find ourselves touching might include town centres and public-private space. We can find ourselves talking about energy and the environment. One of the subjects I was surprised to discover we're likely to be talking about is individual health as well. And actually, that's where I'd like to start this. You want shops to shut their front door for the health of the customers. Can you dig into that?
The health of the customers, and especially the health of the staff, because recently, really, it's become very wide public knowledge, I think, that there are hugely difficult issues around air pollution, and particularly in central London. The small particulates that we get out of the diesel that has happened after the rush to diesel in the 90s, basically, means that there are tiny particulates in the air that you can't see, taste or smell, and they do you an immense amount of damage. There's now proper research on it out of King's College London and also out of Edinburgh University funded by the British Heart Foundation. And these particulates not only cause cancers in your lungs, but they also pass through the lining of your lungs into your bloodstream and cause all sorts of other really very unpleasant long-term health hazards. So the trouble is that the worst effect of that is on the high street. And in fact, the people very worst affected are ambulance drivers and taxi drivers, and people working right out beside heavy junctions. But on busy high streets, where the shops leave their doors wide open, they're really forcing their staff to live an entire day on the high street.
Let me dig, baby. I can hear there's lots to say. The fact that jumped out at me from that batch was the idea that ambulance drivers are a higher risk category than it seems a number of other drivers that you could have mentioned.
Yes, and I'm not quite sure why that is the case, but it's very much what the research at King's College London found. They had a set of people who were really exposed to the worst of the traffic fumes, and ambulance drivers came into it. I believe with taxi drivers there's a bit of a problem because they don't have to have filters on their engines, and they are expensive and they have to be changed quite often, and very often the filters are removed for that reason, I believe. And I think that's they're a great source of emissions on the street in London, and they're also not in a great position themselves.
Well, this is interesting. Okay, so on that level, and I know this is one of several levels, I wonder whether you're attacking the right bit of it in a way. I wonder whether the car fumes, the way in which the cars are manufactured, the choice of vehicles from the London cab company, all those sorts of things, are they a more worthy target or further up the chain?
I think they're absolutely essential, but there are two things about it. First of all, obviously with that, a lot of work is being done, and you know the mayor and everybody else and every single council is extremely concerned about it, but it's going to take quite a lot of time. The Close the Door campaign actually started up about saving significant amounts of energy wasted out of an open shop door, and this has really come into it because in the meantime, while the situation is put straight on the street, which is really going to take quite a long time, we need to protect people who are working in the shops. They're often really young, and at the moment they're really concerned about complaining about anything because they don't want to lose their jobs. So you're absolutely right. If we want to sort the pollution problem out, it needs to be done elsewhere. But there is a very important role for the campaign in this, in the meantime.
I can only imagine that a young shop worker or shop worker of any age might be seen as being rather frivolous to complain that they were next to a road. I mean, after all, what can the shop owner do about that? But so you would go into a shop and say what?
Well, we tend to, at street level, we go in and speak to the managers. Very often they're unaware of both the amount of energy they're losing, and we have proper data on that out of Cambridge University Sustainable Buildings Department, who have done a very, very good survey, and they're losing a massive amount of energy. And we also talk to them about the air pollution. But very often, if they're part of a chain, it's a head office command. And so we're working with the business improvement districts and also with head offices to access the very top ends of the management of the shops.
Now, are you saying, though, that, clearly a diktat from HQ could let the branches know that they need to close their doors. Is there a policy in place currently that says that they should keep their door open?
Absolutely. The vast majority of chain stores are told that they have to keep their doors open or else they'll lose footfall, which is clearly not the case because we now have thousands of shops right across the UK that do this, and they trade very, very successfully from up at Primark level right down to the independents. Independents tend to close their doors because they pay their own bills apart from anything else. But all the money they're wasting on their energy goes on to the price of goods, basically, and the people in fuel poverty, this energy that's being wasted, are the least equipped to deal with it. And it's just a ludicrous situation, but there really is not a problem. On the profit is not badly affected by closing the door.
So where's this myth arisen from?
I really don't know. I think it's a fairly recent one in terms of the last few decades, probably. I mean, I remember when I was younger that doors used to be catch out. And it was the idea of increasing the amount of shopping by luring people in. But actually, you know, if people want what's in your shop and you've got a good window display, they'll come in through anything.
Well, now, I've done a bit of work around retail, and there's the thing called the hot air curtain, isn't there, that you position above your front door?
Yes. It's actually not a curtain. That's a blower. There are things called air curtains, which actually operate from horizontal units. They'd be blowing across. And neither is a good idea at all. The blower above is extremely hungry on energy, and out of the research project at Cambridge, they found that a small one over a single door used up the same amount of energy by puffing hot air out of the door as a coach going to up from London to Glasgow and back in 1 week. And that's just totally wasted air, and really doesn't help anything. And air curtains were made to seal air in an area where there's no movement through it. As soon as you walk through an actual air curtain, which is fairly inefficient anyway, it totally disrupts it. So you cannot keep heat or air conditioning in a building with an air curtain in a sensible way. And that's all there is to it.
So they're probably not even designed for that, are they? It's about...
They weren't designed for that in the first place. I think puffing hot air at people is supposed to make them feel sort of nice and warm as they go into the shop if the door is wide open.
It's in place of a hug.
It's rather unpleasant because it can actually blow your hair all over the place, but yeah.
I'm in a very feeble way going to attempt to be the devil's advocate and come up with... I'm going to try to concoct some sort of reason why it would be a good idea to leave the door open. I know it's doomed to failure already, but let's give it a try. Let's imagine all the poor parents with pushchairs who've got their hands full, or people with bad wrists, or... I'm already clutching at straws, as you can tell. Is there no argument for assisting people to get through the door in that way, by leaving it open?
They definitely need assisting, but not by having the door open. There is absolutely nothing in planning that says that the most disabled person should have a wide open door. You wouldn't expect them to have a wide open door at home, and you shouldn't expect it in the retail sector. They definitely need help, and there are lots and lots of ways you can do that. Quite a lot of shops who do close the door have people ready to sort of open the door, but you can have doorbells, you can have special tassels on the handles. But disabled, really disabled people find it, as far as we can find from the groups that we've spoken to, find it really difficult in shops, because if they're in a shop that's too hot at the back because it's trying to compensate for draft at the front, or they're still in the drafty bit, they can't actually move around and get away from it very easily, and it affects them really badly. So, you know, if it is a ridiculous reason, similarly with buggies. I mean, now they turn on a sixpence. I've had four children in buggies, and it's never been a problem to me to get through a door, and everybody else pretty much reports the same thing. Plus, I think even if somebody had to get up a step and through a door with a buggy, most people are quite concerned about what's going to be happening with all sorts of things for their own children in due course, and they don't want to be wasting energy and polluting the atmosphere by using unnecessary amounts of energy.
You've put in my mind some sort of buggy Olympics where people have to do the assault course with buggy in tow. I think you might be good at it from what you're saying.
Have you never had to try this?
That pleasure is yet to await me.
It is like buggy Olympics, I can tell you, quite often, but not necessarily because of the door.
I can't help noticing that the spot we've chosen for this interview, and we'll be coming on to why we're in Chilton Street here near Marylebone in just a moment, but the commonality between all the retail units here is that they are individual shops. They're old-fashioned, big shop windows, traditional sorts of doors here. It looks like it's been here a while. What we're not seeing is what exists in many areas of London, that is the big mall or shopping centre or arcade. What are the energy issues around those?
Well, the energy issues are fairly similar, but they are more of a problem for us because we use sort of data as far as we can, because we need to let people know what's going on. On the whole, we don't cover shopping malls and shopping centres, although they may be wasting vast amounts of energy, because the amount of energy that is going out is different in every single one, and it's extremely difficult, really, to come to a conclusion about how much energy they will be wasting. However, at the same time, in Cambridge, they've just put doors onto the big new mall there, because it had been designed about sort of 20 years before it opened as a sort of open street with a canopy over it, and that was causing a lot of trouble in the shops. So there is an issue about what happens in shopping malls, etc., but we don't as yet cover it specifically. But interestingly, Vodafone used to have all its doors open and did a very big internal trial, and they found that it was so successful shutting the doors that they now even shut them in malls. So it's something that needs to follow, but we basically concentrate on the high street.
So I'm going to ask a question that's really quite impertinent, but it's not meant in an impertinent way. I mean, in the widest possible sense. Who are you, Jeannie Dawkins?
That is who I am.
have you a hinterland beyond the close the door cover? I mean, what's your? I didn't want to ask anything as simplistic as what's your background, because that sort of suggests career. But more generally, who are you as a person who has found yourself interested in pursuing this line of thought?
Well, I trained as a barrister, and then promptly, having done that, left the country pretty much. My husband was a foreign correspondent with the Financial Times, so we travelled around, lived between Brussels, Paris, and then Tokyo, and came back with 4 children, and I was doing something else.
Your own, or you just found them? The way you said that, it was like...
I picked them, I'm not sure.
Got a luggage mixed up at the airport, and...
So I came back, did something else, and then I thought there was a lot of emphasis going on in 2007 on saving energy at home. A huge amount of government money was going into it, apart from anything else. And in Cambridge, with amazing, where I live, an amazing engineering department, I was walking down the street one day with 3 friends, and the snow was melting in front of WH Smith with the doors wide open. And I just thought, this looks interesting. I need to find out whether it is going to make a big difference, saving in the retail sector as well as at home. And the figures came out with a resounding yes, we need to do something about it. So I thought, I'll do something about it. I thought it would take me 6 months, and it's now 2013.
I was going to ask, well, can you put a year or approximate date on when that happened? What was the... Because we've been through phases of awareness. There was the whole green thing in the late 80s, and then environmentally aware, and then the whole global warming thing. And so when was that realisation positioned?
2006, 2007 winter, there was a lot of emphasis on what we were doing at home. And we just was sort of thought, well, you know, if all this money and pressure is going into what we do at home, which quite rightly, a lot of us are shoppers, and well, we all have to spend a certain amount of time shopping, and a lot of people do it for a lot of their lives, and yet they don't carry the thought that you would never do this at home. You never turn on the heating and then open your doors and windows, but they didn't carry it into the retail area. And as you say, there's a whole other thing with that about whether it's a public space. We treat it as a public space, basically.
There's a question that's sort of bubbling up inside. I don't think it's quite formulated itself properly in my head. So I just, some of the building blocks for it are maybe a sort of a consumerist outlook equaling carelessness, recklessness, just a desire to buy, and not really thinking about that as having any responsibilities. It being about stuffing the stuff in your bag and thinking about what you want and what's going to look good on you and all that kind of stuff. But the idea of having a conscience, with the rare exceptions of perhaps fair trade products or something like that, on the whole, that it's quite an unethical arena, isn't it?
Yes.
Being a consumer.
Well, it certainly can be, and of course, there's a huge emphasis on you, what you can amass, what you can take at pretty well anybody's expense, it seems, in some cases, but. There is a real turn towards considering what we are doing about using resources. I think. There's also a very big emphasis on what is happening at the beginning of the supply chain, which again was ignored in the very selfish sort of 90s, basically. And now it's completely unacceptable to have slave labour involved at last, involved in the making of goods. It does happen, but it's not
okay.
Well,
it really does happen, yeah.
It really does happen, but it needs monitoring the whole time. And you've only got to see what happened with the collapse of the building and so on in Bangladesh. That, you know, it's hideous, absolutely hideous, but it's not okay. People get away with it, but it's not okay, and we all feel that. Whereas at the far end of the supply chain, where the shop interface is there with the customer, it's just pretty much ignored. So the staff are in horrific conditions sometimes, literally horrific conditions. If you think that 10,000 people across the UK, but a lot of them in London, died from directly these particulate-related diseases in 1 year alone, which equated, in actuarial terms, they worked out it was 340,000 years of human life lost. You know, this is... We really need to be paying attention to the conditions that are going on in there, but also to the amount of energy that we're wasting.
Can we? I think we should linger on that figure and unpack that a little bit, shouldn't we? Remind me of the figure and how we're able to understand that that was directly attributable to the sort of things you're talking about.
Well, the figures were from out of the King's College London research, and I think they're fairly easily worked out. They looked at the figures come out the whole time from the NHS now too on all this, and it is possible, unfortunately, when people die, to see what the causes were. And particulates are, you know, it's not just a guess, it's actually what's happening.
And is that figure rising, or what's it doing?
Well it is apparently rising, but I can't give you actual details on that. It's going up every year, and that's really not surprising because it's obviously cumulative, and it may well spike, but most cancers are actually expected to be growing in numbers anyway. So
it's always been unhealthy to live in a city, but that cumulative element that you mentioned there, that's particularly frightening, isn't it?
It's very frightening. I mean, there's actually evidence that children are also getting reduced lung capacity from if you look at them in very polluted areas. So the first, if you look at China, which is of course millions of times worse, but the youngest recorded death from lung cancer there is now 8 years old. So, you know, we've got a long way to go before we get there, but something really needs to be done.
Well, that brings us neatly to your modus operandi. How do you... Because we're standing out here, ironically enough, in the street. We could have picked a better venue. Should have met indoors. Now I'm terrified to be out here.
Nice quiet street.
Well, now, hang on. I was about to move us on, but now that you say that, with fewer cars passing down the street, and fewer is relative in this part of town...
Yes.
There can't be any less risk. It must be that these particulates are drifting down from all over town, right?
They do drift down from all over town, but the evidence is quite strongly, actually, that... You basically can save yourself quite a lot even by walking on the opposite side of the street to a line of very slow moving traffic, and it does drop off quite remarkably. If you go onto the King's College London Clean Air website, you can actually see some very, very detailed maps of current pollution, so that you can work out your best way around London if you're walking or cycling or whatever you're doing from that. And it is quite surprising how it drops. Yes, the pollution levels are high everywhere, but they are very concentrated around the busy roads.
You'll have heard, of course, the lovely comparison. Lovely in no sense, it's neat. The comparison of one tube trip to breathing in the smoke from two cigarettes in terms of air quality. Are there any similarly vivid illustrations of walking around on the surface?
Well, I'm sure there probably are, if you ask the King's College guys. On the tube thing, slightly going off at a tangent, but it was interesting at an event on air pollution up in North London. Two of the King's College guys came with sensitive monitoring equipment on them, travelled from King's Cross up there. One went by tube and one went sort of along streets and through parks, and they were mapped as they went. And I've decided never to go on the tube again if I can help it, because the concentration of muck down there that was registered was many times what was picked up at the worst crossroads, so on the way. So bad, basically, yes.
You've got a battle on your hands.
Yes, I think a lot of people are battling about this.
Now, what do you see as being your theatre of war then? And perhaps that I can bring it back to that idea of how you operate. But is it the case that you are really just very tightly focusing on this one particular issue, or are you working on a broader front?
Well, I think we're focusing on the retail space because it's an area where we can do something and where we have made quite a few changes, I think, already. But it brings in, as it goes along, it brings in more factors. I would love to be able to do something about vehicles on the streets and so on, but I think there are people better equipped to do that than me. And I think concentrating on something it's a relatively small issue, but it has a reasonable significance because so much time is spent and so many people work in the retail side in shops. It is somewhere where, as one person and with the other people who are involved in this, we can actually make a reasonable difference. You know, I'm not the mayor of London, so I can't sort of, you know, wave a magic wand. I'm not quite sure if he can or not. But anyway, there is definitely an issue here that can be tackled.
It seems, on the face of it, quite a modest request that the shop should do this. But I wonder how compliant you found retailers, whether it's the independent or the chain, to be.
The chains are particularly non-compliant, basically.
But for what reason? You'd have thought they'd have bigger savings to make.
I think they're not particularly interested in saving energy, to be quite honest. A lot of them, this is not blanket, but quite a lot of them are not particularly interested in that. They're not very often at head office immensely close to the bills that come in from the various shops. They're quite, on the whole, some of the chain retailers, quite a conservative bunch, and they certainly don't like being asked to change any sort of behaviour that's going on.
That really surprises me, given, I mean, we all know the lovely story of the British Airways olives or whatever it was, where they took a tiny thing off each meal that they served and saved themselves millions in the process. Surely the same must obtain, probably much more so, with, a fictional coffee chain, you know.
Well, yes. I mean, it definitely does work when they shut the doors. And I think the message is now beginning to spread. There are some great companies who really do back their CSR claims. I mean, a lot of companies have very green corporate social responsibility claims, but when you look at it, I mean, one of the worst, to be quite honest, is something like Lush, that had a blackboard outside its doors last winter going, what's good for the climate is good for the economy, had their doors wide open, big doors wide open, and they just say, oh, we leave it to the individual managers. And of course, individual managers would never shut doors by themselves, because any drop in profits will be blamed on this particular change of behaviours, be due to a multitude of things. But it's a way of kind of pushing the question off. And they think they might get a slight, my suspicion is they think they might get a slight advantage somehow in somebody coming in through the space if the doors open.
Well, no, I think I've just found the strongest possible argument I can for particular shops leaving their doors open, and I'm thinking of somewhere like Lush or a bakery, perhaps something like that. And you know, when you walk down the high street, you know there's a Lush around long before you get anywhere near the Lush.
You certainly do. Quite a lot of people find that very troubling, as it turns out. But
why so? No, not really. That's a pretty solid case, though, isn't it? That surely, if you're selling something nice and smelly, you want your customers to smell it.
It's actually very easy to pipe out a little bit of smell. That's not too difficult, and you know, it's something that supermarkets do in little tiny areas of them, and some of the shops do. But you know, you don't need to have a door wide open in order to do that. So.
That is the only point in our conversation so far where I have been less than entirely persuaded, and even then I'm most of the way over the line. So as far as what you do on a day-to-day basis goes, I've sort of got the impression that there's not just you. You've mentioned a we.
No, there is a small team of people all over the country, actually, and people drop in and out. There's a wonderfully active person in Islington, who does all our Twitter as well as working full time and also tackles some of the bigger issues. And then we have a wonderful person down in Bristol who is older, used to work with one of the very, very active students who's now disappeared and moved on. But she's made a huge difference down there. There was a member of the Isle of Guernsey government who was doing it down there. There are a vast range of people. There are groups in all over the place, in Kingston and Birmingham and in cities all over the place. And there are all sorts of different people who've lent their support.
Well, that's interesting. And this geographic dispersal of your organisation as well must pose some challenges. But what's your role within that in terms of hands-on organisation and also in terms of what I guess I'd call outreach?
Well, what we try to do is, I started in Cambridge with two other people. So there were three founders. I'm now the person left there organising all that. And we rolled it out across the country as people got interested and we got more publicity. And what we do is have very strong guidelines. We are business friendly. This won't work for the shops. Nobody's going to do it unless it works for them. And it's very clear it does. There are fantastic companies like John Lewis and so on and so forth who are completely, Marks and Spencer and so on, who are completely behind it. We know it works. But we have these very tight guidelines. We absolutely do not go in and rant at the retailers, because you're just dismissed as being completely mad if you do that. And you need your comments to go on and be passed on to head offices, which they generally are, we find, later on. But so we tend to leave groups, be in close contact as we can with them, but be very happy that it's their bit of campaign, absolutely their bit of campaign, so long as they adhere to our guidelines. And they will take our logo and usually customise it for the local area and completely organise what they do for themselves there.
Does that mean you personally are beating the streets yourself, or are you going to do head office meets? Or
I tend to do more head offices now, but no, I definitely do beat the streets as well. You need to be doing both ends and to stay in touch with it.
So you're a known individual?
Probably to some people, I don't know.
you're the door woman to somebody, aren't you?
Try to keep not to being the mad door woman.
Londonist Out Loud is sponsored by Audible. To claim your free audiobook from a range of 60,000 titles, try the Audible service on 30-day free trial. Audiobooks can be saved as MP3s and played on your compatible phone, tablet, or desktop, or burned to CD, and they're yours to keep. For your free audiobook, go to www.audible.co.uk/Londonist and click through.
You've brought us to Chilton Street here in West One, and I suspect there is a reason for us being here.
Yes. Chilton Street, it used to be really rather dingy and depressing, and used to specialise in shops for sort of very tall people or long shoes.
Oh, I'm in the right place.
I knew it because I have a 6 foot two, very beautiful 6 foot two daughter, I have to say. But we used to come down here and it was depressing when she was about 15 to this dingy street. And now it's been completely revived. It's just been voted Condé Nast Traveller's coolest street in London, this end. Here we go. And it looks, all the shops look like £1 million, but they're not, because if you go into them, you'll find there's a very, very beautiful award-winning designer jeweller over there called Kahatu and Petros. And if you go in, you know, there's some very beautiful things that start under £30 and it goes up, which is quite a lot of money, obviously, but for a jeweller, that's not. You go further down the street and there's a guy selling sort of sweets and newspapers and so on, and he's even got a sort of grid of metal in the window, and his door's shut. And they work basically on this principle that they're going to be a nice, welcoming place to come into. As you said, they've got beautiful shop windows, and they're just a really great place to go.
We've done a good sales pitch. Is this to get the people on side? Because I noticed most of them have got their doors shut already.
No. I don't need to get them on side here. They had their doors shut for themselves because they knew that it worked for retail. It was nothing to do with me. Already done.
So these guys are switched on. Okay, well, let's just head down the street, shall we? Is that your direction of travel that you've got in mind?
Yes. So we probably need to keep going because it's and for the first time.
Yes, it is cold, isn't it?
Here's a little shop that looks not, you know...
What are you saying about this shop?
Sorry, I'm just saying that...
You're going to say something offensive about this shop.
Actually going to stop right there.
Yes, let's, we're getting a bit Mary Portas about it suddenly. The sirens in the background that you heard, by the way, because somebody's left the door open.
If only. If we can get to that, that would be quite handy.
Well, just stepping back for a moment, I mean, this is really a very attractive part of town, and you're right, it does... $1 million is exactly the description. I would have thought that I probably shouldn't be allowed in here.
Well, ooh, here we have one with the door open, a chain store, Long Tall Sally, what a pity.
Yes, it looks like it's permanently open as well. This doesn't look like a moment.
And it's not supposed to be. I think they're very happy at head office to have their door shut when I last checked.
So what's your thoughts here? I was sort of expecting that I might be involved in guerrilla attacks with you today, but you're just going to pass that by. What are you going to do about that situation?
Well, I have to say guerrilla attacks are not really my style. A nice conversation with a manager, more like. But what I will do, because I've had quite a bit to do with Long Tall Sallys around the place, and a lot of them are very, very good about shutting their doors, is probably another time to come back, have a word with them, but mainly speak to the head office. And because what most of these shops need is a really great policy out saying, you know, this is what we want you to do, and then they're more likely to do it.
So it's the presence of me and my microphone, actually, is probably not going to help that negotiation, is it?
Well, the presence, I think it would terrify everybody to death, because they wouldn't know what was going to come of it.
People do get twitchy.
Me too.
Even me. And I'm holding the thing. Well, they look, oh, there's, these guys are going to get a black mark.
Oh, here we have another one with them. Yes, yeah.
They have a device specially designed for keeping the door open, not merely the wedge for these guys. They've got a flat iron. That's really thumbing their noses at you.
It certainly is. But as you can see as we go down, pretty well all the doors are shut. And we've had... There's a whiskey shop over there. And we've had quite a lot of offies with their doors open, saying, oh, well, nobody will come in without. It's quite... I mean, a lot of them now shut the door. But you can imagine, particularly with something like drink, if people want it, they go in.
Yes, I've never yet seen that be a major obstacle, yeah.
But that's what they say, or did say, before more of them shut it. Various sort of dress shops and things which you'd expect to have their doors closed. But funnily enough, we're going to go around the corner in a minute to Marylebone High Street, I think. And you'll see there that actually most clothes shops have their doors open for some bizarre reason.
What made you say that you'd expect a dress shop to have its door shut? Is that just because people are changing in and out?
Yeah,
and,
exactly. Yeah. People want to change and be in a fairly cosy atmosphere. But most of the chains insist on having their doors open, although customers complain that close near the doors. about to freeze now. Clothes near the doors are clammy and cold to pick up, and they may be much too hot in the changing rooms because they're being blasted with heat to sort of try to sort out the draft problem further along in the shop.
Yes, that's interesting. I always find that in changing rooms, that I'm far too overheated.
It's not the most pleasant feeling.
Traditional barbers there. I'd strongly recommend, if you're in a shopping mood, this is a good street to have a little nose around.
Actually, it's a lovely street, and as I said, it looks as if it's extremely expensive, but the shops do have things in them that are actually affordable, which is very nice.
Now we're coming to the end of the street here. We're at the junction with Blandford Street. I don't think I've been down here at all. Do you know this area well? I mean, you're Cambridge-based, as you say. Do you have a connection with this bit of town?
I do a lot of work up in London now. And the Business Improvement District's pretty important. They're a group of the businesses within particular areas who get together, and are pretty influential, actually, about what happens and what sort of developments are going to go on. And there's some quite interesting... ideas. So there's a big in the Baker Street bit, which is covers Chiltern Street that we've just been in. There are some really exciting moves about reducing traffic, increasing pedestrian space, and so on and so forth on the street. As a result of that, I I am down in London, both with head offices and... and seeing shops, but also seeing the Business Improvement District groups as well, and city councils come, you know, all sorts of things, really.
What we've discussed so far all seems very harmonious in the way you present it, but I can't help feeling that what's in the best interests of getting people to spend money in shops isn't necessarily going to be what's in the best interests of health, the environment, those sort of things. And I can see that what you're trying to do is find a way for those things to come together and assist each other. Do you ever find yourself pulled in two different directions as far as those sort of issues are concerned?
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. I mean, I think there are a lot of people involved in both shopping and in the retail side who... probably don't take a particularly social view of what they're doing. But
for the sake of balance, there are probably quite a few people on the green side of things who would take an unreasonable view of commerce or retail or things like that just because it is what it is.
Yes, and I think it can be extremely unhelpful to go and rant at anybody. Yes, there are people who feel very, very angry about the situation and do want to go and have a really good complaint and a rant at shops, and you know, that's their prerogative, but we do ask that people like that don't say that they're anything to do with the campaign, because our approach is very much to make relationships with the managers and the staff so that we can explain to them and get them on side, which is actually what happens. And it may not happen straight away, but we go back time and time again, and then we've had quite a lot of success with people listening and thinking, yeah, okay, well, you know, I think it's right, we'll give it a go, either have a trial or go straight into shutting the door.
Some of the arguments I know on the environmental side of things can be, and I don't know if this is because they're hyped up by elements of the media or whether they are in themselves very urgent, sometimes to the extent of being apocalyptic, I think. And you can perhaps understand why. And they sort of suggest that there's a deadline for things reaching a tipping point or a point of no return or whatever it might be. Do you subscribe to any of those sort of things? Is there an urgency, a deadline, something like that involved in your thinking?
I think there is a certain amount of urgency, yes. I mean, without being alarmist, if you look at the IPCC reports, which I take a fairly empirical view of things, and you know, I think they're good, and we do need to get on with things. However, we also need to be realistic about what we can actually achieve, and I think it's very easy to become so depressed at all the apocalyptic messages that come out that people are sort of completely paralysed, basically, and just do nothing, which is completely the wrong approach. So I don't feel that, you know, the whole world is going to go up in flames or whatever, but at the same time I do think we need to be doing what we can as soon as we can rather than putting it off and closing our eyes.
I suppose the danger of that sort of thing is that a moderate, measured approach like that can be a much harder sell.
I think it's very much more easy to win people over if you want a behaviour change with a moderate approach than coming at it, either making people feel extremely scared or being rather aggressive about it. It just isn't something that persuades people, I find. Doesn't work with children, doesn't work with adults.
I want to frame that idea in my mind and bring that out whenever necessary. I feel I'm going to find plenty of application for that. We're heading up now to Moxon Street. It's school kicking out time, as you can probably hear in the background. Le Vieux Comptoir towards our left there, and what looks like either a churchyard or some gardens. Oh, I like this bit of town. If it weren't for the car park to our right, this would be quite picturesque.
I'm sure that's going to be developed into something, don't you think? I think it has to be, looking at what's going on around here. But you were looking at the Le Vieux Comptoir, which is over there, and it just sort of, brings to mind... the fact is, it's really weird that lots of restaurants, we cover restaurants and cafes as well, lots of restaurants and cafes very happily had their doors wide open, doing the same things as the shops. which struck me as really weird when people go in and sit down and don't want to sit in a draft and things. It took 3 years working with Costa Coffee, first chain of shops to go over, and they really mind what they do and they're very responsible about what they get up to. They now all shut their doors, and surprise, surprise, children can't run out onto the street. Customers are really comfortable. The staff are much more comfortable, and it really works. But they are unusual as a big chain of even coffee shops. So we do have a problem with the restaurants and cafes as well that needs to be tackled.
I suppose at the root of all of this is this idea that in order to be welcoming, the door must be open, and it's even found its way into phraseology, you know, come in, my door's always open.
Yes, no, that's true, and it's quite a difficult one to get over, but you can, as many retailers who do close their doors will tell you, if you make your shop look really welcoming and you have a sign up outside it, and it's a nice place to come into, not too boiling, because you can keep the temperature at a much lower level if you have got the door shut. It's actually a good thing, and people will then stay in the shop longer, which is, of course, what every retailer wants.
I think I've certainly seen a big difference in whether or not you have a sign at the door saying open. That really... That's the indicator people are looking for, really, isn't it?
Well, you can have that, but actually the way you do your window will make it very clear whether it's open or not, too. So, as you were saying in Chilton Street just now, they had lovely windows, and that's what pulls people, you know, in through the door, basically.
We're in Marylebone High Street. Jack Wills is the first on the roll of shame, sorry to say. Door wide open.
Every single branch you ever come across with Jack Wills, just the same. So maybe they're not quite aware of what they're doing to their staff. But actually, even on temperature, they found in the Cambridge research that you can't keep your staff in the normal accepted, that's called CIBSE guidelines, for healthy working in the retail sector. You can't keep them in those temperatures. If you've got the door open, they're either going to be too hot if you're blasting heat out at the back of the shop, or too cold and drafty at the front once the temperature drops.
Have any legal cases been brought along those lines?
No, they're guidelines. It's not legislated for.
Oh, right, that's interesting.
Yes.
Are we talking then about something that doesn't have teeth?
Well, yes, I suppose it has teeth insofar as reasonable retailers do like to keep their staff in the right conditions, and the guidelines do give a proper idea of what the conditions could be. But for the ones who don't care, then no, there are no sort of firm teeth to deal with it on.
Oh, that's
shame,
it.
But not teeth.
Yes, right. No, that's interesting. I suppose nothing would make retailers sit up more than, you know, a member of staff saying, "Well, you, as a result of working here, I got an illness," and taking legal action.
Well, supposedly, but then the staff need to keep their jobs. It's very, very difficult as a member of staff not to be exploited if somebody wants to. And that's what it boils down to.
Well, we're heading down the Couples, which is a store I still haven't quite got to grips with. I don't understand their advertising.
I'm standing just outside the door about, what, would you say about 3 feet
it's
from
nice
it?
And warm, yeah.
It's really hot. It's a nice hot street here going straight up into the atmosphere.
That's really intense heat.
Yeah. That's just such. That's not heat that's needed in the shop. That's just literally being wasted. It's like standing in a drought with a hose pipe, full on, and just letting it run.
I've got a bit of a confession. I'm a bit of a heating geek at the moment for reasons I won't go into. But I'd say that's 2 or 3 kilowatts of heat. That's at least 1.5 electric heaters on at full pelt.
Basically in the street, and that money has to come from somewhere, and presumably if the shop stays open it goes on to the price of goods in the end. Do you really want to be paying for this?
Eileen Fisher has a device attached to the outside of their shop there to keep the door open.
Slightly less hot than the next door shop, but still a nice heated bit again, you know, out on the street.
Well, I think we get the message even from just those first few examples. As we look down the street here in Marylebone High Street, we can see plenty of shops with their doors open. The local pharmacy seems to have theirs open. I think I can see the license down there does. Plenty of the chain stores do. In fact, they seem to be in the majority. Now, here's an irony. Cancer research.
This is really quite shocking. Some of the charity shops, like Oxfam, on the whole, they do their very best to keep doors shut. Cancer research, when you think the air pollution is causing cancer, this is a busy street, Marylebone High Street. They have their doors wide open. And you kind of think, what is going on here? You're making money to do research into cancers and putting your staff in a not great situation and wasting a lot of energy at the same time.
Have you spoken to them yet?
We have spoken to cancer research, not to this particular shop. And we keep getting told, no, we're not going to do anything about it. There is a problem, actually, with the charity shops in that they're often run by volunteers, and the volunteer managers may have slightly antiquated ideas about how they should be selling things. And it is quite difficult to monitor it from that point of view. It's much more difficult to do things with a group of volunteers than with paid staff. So there is an issue around that. But even so, some charity shops do very, very well and some don't, and cancer research doesn't.
Well, that's remarkable, isn't it? Really peculiar. Well, I've got to say, I didn't think we were going to get 50 minutes out of telling people to close their doors.
There's quite a bit to it.
There is.
I think the thing to say about this street is that Marylebone High Street is a great street, it's very beautiful, but it is full of chain stores, and it really illustrates my point that the management at the top end of chain stores is really not very tuned into what should be going on at street level, although there are some fantastic examples.
So we need some visionary management and direction at the top of these organisations to follow the likes of John Lewis and Marks and
Spencer.
We really
do. There are those really great examples out there who are doing the right thing, and more shops are now coming into it. We seem to have got many more now contacting us rather than us contacting them. There are quite a few that are almost there but not quite ready to make the statement, which is great because it means a lot of the doors are shut. They really need to follow those great companies that are doing a good thing because it works.
Well, it's, as we've, I think, illustrated here, it's a chilly day. It's going to get chillier, and more heat's going to be pumped out. I, for one, am about to go and stand outside Couples to warm up a little bit. Before we go, we should touch on the relevant websites and so that people can see what's going on with the campaign.
It is www.closethedoor.org.uk. But what you might also be interested in, sort of slightly attached to it, is the King's College London Clean Air website. If you're worried about what's happening in London, you want either annual report, which gives you a good idea, or a live idea of which streets are most polluted to avoid at any given time, just go onto the Clean Air website. They've done fantastic work on that. You can also get a phone app that will help you, and it's particularly good if you've got small kids who are down at exhaust level.
And I think there's also some controversy around some figures. I vaguely remember reading some of the figures around the London clean air measurements a little while ago. So if you're interested in this subject, there may well be some interesting stuff to look at there. I think the bottom line to this, though, is it's not rocket science. Keep the heat inside the building and everything will work out beautifully for everyone concerned. Jeannie Dawkins, thanks so much for taking the time today.
Thank you very much for having me.
My heart aches for some far-off place, no one could have left you.
And that's all for this week. My thanks to my guest Jeannie Dawkins. Thanks too to Matt Keane, Mark Barr and Bernie Barkley. Theme and incidental music was by Songs from the Howling Sea. I'm N. Quentin Wolfe.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.